Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. ebaymotors.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp, Fightful.com, here with a name you know, and you're going to get to know this name a lot more soon. We got Steve Macklin, formerly Steve Cutler in WWE. Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing awesome, and boy, is there plenty to talk to you about.
There is a lot.
You're undergoing a major career change, life change. There's a lot of stuff going on. You are an impending free agent very, very soon. How are you feeling, first off?
Honestly, great. Obviously, when I got the news in February that I was let go via phone call from Mark Carano, I wasn't the happiest person for like the first 2 weeks. But once kind of like the anger kind of way, I've now just kind of realized the freedom I do have creatively and to reinvent myself and kind of take ideas that I've pitched for years in NXT and just little inklings of character things I've done at promo class that you'd have in the performance center at that time. And now just get to create. It's fun. And it's really been the fun process of everything of creating and finding who I am out of it and kind of knowing who I was the whole time too.
And I mean, this is almost completely new to you because you got signed relatively early in your career.
Yeah. So once I started wrestling in 2012, I started at the Monster Factory in Paulsboro, New Jersey with Danny Cage, the famous Larry Sharp Monster Factory. Within about a year and a half, I was picked up. I was there for about a year. He had Joe Briscoe come in for a talent and tryout seminar to scout. And I love that I can be a Briscoe boy. Because he's the man, him and his brother, both just legends. But it was just a blessing at that time, but then also a curse. Because at that time that I did get signed, after about a year and a half, in 2014, I started at the Performance Center, was when WWE wasn't signing indie talent at that time. It was not the thing. They wanted to have homegrown talent. And then once Kevin Owens came in later that May, after that first takeover, May, June timeframe, Finn Balor, Kenta, everybody started coming in, and wow, that's just when NXT blew up, and that was when the influx of everybody came from everywhere, and nothing wrong with it. It's the business, but it just times change with everything, and that's what was hot.
We're definitely going to talk a lot more about that because you saw a lot of change in NXT. Like,
in the beginning, pretty much.
An incredible amount of change in NXT. But your release, how did that call go and how did you feel? Was it a surprise to you?
Yeah, it was a very big surprise just because, like I said in my tweet, like it was just more shocking than anything just because I did not expect that from what was being said to me, and then also not being said to me as well. I could have, part of me is like, oh, okay, now I'm looking back at things. I'm like, all right, it does make sense. But so from my side of the story, which everybody plays the game of telephone in the wrestling universe. So my side of the story is New Year's Eve, go to a party with friends that I was around with throughout COVID who were constantly tested. We all know because we all work together. So it's a small knit group that we have. We had a New Year's party and there was multiple New Year's party, and that's where the mix up came at somehow. I don't know higher, but doesn't merely mean anything now. But so we had the New Year's party. Next day, go to TV. I test negative. We work TV. Blake and I are there with Corbin. We do our thing. Monday, I find out one of the friends that we had there tested positive. So Deanna and I went out and got tested like we should do, like anybody should have done, like the right-minded. And I came back negative, and that was that Monday. So, okay, cool. No symptoms, nothing happening. Go to TV Friday, and I test positive for the nose swab at WWE TV at Tropicana Field. And I'm like, okay, what do I do? Get on the hotline with the doctors. We talk. We find out what's going on. And they said, yep, just quarantine. Okay, cool. Talk to the writers. Everything's cool. And then Blake tested negative, so he stayed. So I'm on my way home, and then here I am getting texts from Blake, get a phone call. I'm like, hey, do you have heat, like, for something you have done? I'm like, I don't know why. He goes, somebody's kind of pissed, and a few people said in the meeting that, like, Vince wanted to fire you at that moment. And then I had a few friends that were in the meeting as well. I was like, okay, that's good. So, of course, I send a message to Mark Carano and saying, hey, like, I don't know what's going on or what's being thrown around. If there's anything you need to talk to me about, please call me, text me, let me know what's up. No answer. And that's how I found out pretty much that I had COVID that day. Did quarantine for the next week. Kept in contact with writers. Still no answer back from hire of writing team and creative team. What a time. So it was just one of those moments of lost. And then one of the writers that we kept in touch with said, no, you guys are fine. You guys were brought up in creative as well. Okay, cool. And then weeks go by. Weeks go by again. I know Vince McMahon wasn't at TV for a while because his brother passed, and condolences for that. Like, so we kind of knew, like, all right, cool. Obviously we're not getting an answer because the boss isn't there. Makes sense. So in the meantime, I got in touch with Mark Carano because Otis reached out to me. He's like, hey brother, you mind like coming around, like rolling around like in the, with the big man class? He's like, we could use some help. I'm like, dude, definitely. I was like, it gets me in the ring, keeps me in shape. I get to actually be in a good ring. That's and at the PC, and I know everybody, and I can bump around and know, I know how Otis works. We've worked together for years. So that day I'm in there, it's coach Adam Pierce, well, producer Adam Pierce at that time, myself, Drew Gulak, Babatunde, and then, Big Jordan. I forget what his name is now on TV.
Omos.
Thank you. Awesome human being. And we're all just kind of rolling around, and I get done in the ring, and I have a text from Mark Carano saying, hey Steve, he's like, when you give me a call, a chance, give me a call. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. It's just about maybe something creative. I text him back. I'm like, hey, I'm just leaving the PC now. Can you call now? He's like, oh, I'm getting on a flight to Tampa. He's like, I can get back to you here in a little bit. I was like, no problem. A few hours go by, I get home, eating dinner. It's around 7:30. And then I get the call from Carano saying, hey Steve. I'm like, oh, hey Mark, how is everything? He's like, good. He's like, I don't make making these calls, but obviously, and I instantly just clicked instantly. I'm like, ah, I'm getting fired. Awesome. Damn. Looked at D. I was just like, gosh, what's the matter? I was like, I'm getting fired. And lo and behold, almost a year later, it's the same exact time frame, kind of close to when she was let go.
Yeah.
But it was just one of those things. And the phone call just, I don't know, it was more upsetting just because for me to say that creative had nothing for us was kind of the, no, I got fired because I had heat for COVID. And I know people kind of say like, well, that's your own fault. I'm like, yeah, maybe it is. But at the same time, I took my own precautions. I live in the state of Florida that it's an open state of policies on anything with COVID related. I wear my mask when I'm out. I do what I'm supposed to do. But then when I'm around friends that I know are tested, I try to take care of that myself. And I surround myself with who I know that we're good with. And if it happened like we did, I got tested. So with the phone call, it was just being told creative had nothing for us. And I called BS right away on that. I let him have his piece. And I was like, well, if creative has nothing for us, why do we have merchandise? Why are we being told we're going to be in the storyline? I was like, I was told our storyline with the Mysterios was scrapped because when they contracted COVID, that took us off TV and scrapped that story for that little bit. And then they tried to go back to it. And then Murphy got COVID. And it was just like, it just kept building up. And it's just like, listen, everything that you're saying is honest, but we just have to say that creatively had nothing for you. Okay. I was like, so if creative had nothing for me, then for the last year since we've been off TV, Blake and I, because of the Twitter situation with Riker, how do you have nothing for me when I've pitched ideas almost every week? And that was also, hey, everything you're saying, there's nothing wrong with what you're saying, but creative had nothing for me. So just to end it on that is like, I know I did everything on my end that I could as a company guy. And also for my love of the company and for just of the business in general that I could on my end. But now, like I said, I get to create, I get to be me. And that's the one thing now I love the most is I really don't have anybody to tell me no, like always.
So there's an awful lot to unpack there. Had you had, I assume that you hadn't had any FaceTime with Vince since the COVID test, one, because obviously he had COVID for a little while, but two, his brother had passed away, as you mentioned, and then you were released. So from that point, did you ever, like, were you at the tapings again? Like, how did that work?
We were just told, nope, don't worry about it. You guys are fine. Just stay at home. Like, writers have ideas once we're needed. Like, because they were trying to be strict to the protocols of with COVID, sure, which is understandable. Of like, why be in the building when you don't need to be? Which makes sense. Because a lot of the times people are just sitting and catering anyway, and then you just leave. To keep it that way, I think, in the safe standpoint.
One of the theories that was thrown out to me by talent was, well, Steve Cutler was released because Super Bowl weekend's coming up, and this is the definitive way to say, don't be at a Super Bowl party without a mask. Had you heard that at all?
No. Yes and no. I know I was made the example of, and I get it. I was in the military, being in the Marines. There's always that one person. It only takes one. I was made the example of, but I know that for a fact, people were out for New Year's. Nobody's stupid. Like, you know, people are going to go out on New Year's, enjoy themselves. Me, I did the cautious thing where I'm around friends that I'm always with. But at the same time, like, it's a blessing in disguise. I look at it now, I'm like, cool, this is the greatest thing to ever happen to me. And I had a few people write out as soon as I was let go, that was one of the few texts to me of other people that were let go, saying like, you have no idea how great this is going to be for you.
So I had posted a tweet yesterday that you never know what the future is going to hold for a WWE wrestler when they're released. Five of their last nine champions were released at some point. Another guy left for 8 years. Do you see that bridge is burned, or do you think that maybe down the line you could do business with them again?
I could see that there's an open door policy. From what I'm told, everybody always has that open door policy. Obviously, I had that heat with Vince. Mm-hmm. So that's also one of those things where I don't know if he would forget it. Because it's one of those things where one thing happens one day and somebody else screws up the next day and it's forgotten about type thing.
We've seen Gallows come back and Vince didn't remember who he used to be. So if you get over as Steve Macklin, there's a good chance he'd be like, oh, it's Steve Macklin.
Yeah. So it's just one of those things where that's just wrestling. And like I said, I was made the example of, and I'm fine with it. And it's still, again, one of the best things. Does it hurt? Yes. Because as a kid, this is all I dreamed of ever doing was wrestling for the WWE. But now in the world of professional wrestling and sports entertainment, like, you have so many avenues. There are so many places to work. And that's the best thing for anybody. And even with their last batch of releases, like, there is so many places to work and there's opportunity. The world's starting to open up again in the wrestling world. And like, I feel it. And I'm talking with friends, like, that indie bubble right now of independence, like, people are ready just to enjoy wrestling again in that sense for live crowds. And I can't wait for that because that's my favorite thing of wrestling is the live crowds. Like, TV is great and all, but live crowds, you get to interact, you get to have fun, stuff happens organically. And that's where I have the most fun.
So I kind of want to go almost like in reverse through your career because there's so much to talk about here. And we had mentioned the indies, like there's Josh Barnett's Bloodsport out there right now, which presents a completely different style. A lot of people had no idea Karrion Kross could work that style until he popped up there. You've got GCW and Black Label Pro and Warrior Wrestling, a lot of these like very popular indies that get people noticed. And right now the TV products, NWA, MLW, Impact Wrestling, AEW, Ring of Honor, as you mentioned, a lot of options, and you happen to live with somebody who has navigated that, especially over the last year. Did that? I mean, considering that you haven't navigated that for like what, seven, eight years at this point?
Yeah, I was with. I started January of 2014 at the Performance Center, so I was with NXT since then. So I know that what WWE style would be, mm-hmm. and what they want out of production and how to work TV and all that. But now it's having the fun part too, though, is like a lot of the guys that came in from the indies, like your War Raiders, Adam Cole, like ever just watching everybody, you just see Kyle O'Reilly, Bobby Fish, Roddy, Tommaso, Johnny, like you get all these stars, Kevin, Finn, Hideo, like you can keep going. Bobby Roode from being from TNA back and then coming in and just seeing how he works and turns a crowd when they want to chant for him. And yet he's able to just heal them instantly. Like that's a guy I watched a lot just to see how they like they're working towards this style compared to what they used to do.
So how have you navigated this situation? Because it's not just robust indies and robust promotions. It is a different time because of COVID. Yeah. So have you had conversations or even accepted bookings yet? How are you managing that with other companies right now?
Yeah, bookings. I'm open for bookings. Obviously, everything past May 5th, once my 90 days is up. A few bookings have come down. Obviously I can't announce them or all that yet, but till May 5th, but it's going pretty good. I'm pretty happy with it. Working some things out in certain places. I can't say. But yeah, I'm just excited to just get my story out there like we're doing now, but just to even show the world kind of who I am with us not having that microscope over us the whole time. Like, 'cause we're always ready to light that spark with Blake and I, and then it just never happened.
Well, you mentioned us and Blake and I. Unfortunately, he got released as well, and I know he's, without ever speaking to him, I know he's a big family man, and he's going to be looking probably to get right back to work. Are you guys open to teaming? It seemed like it on Twitter.
Yeah, we're always. He's my brother. If there's ever a brother in wrestling, he's my brother. We've been on the road together for, what, six and a half, seven years almost together? Just riding in the car all the time. And then even just working together was just the most fun times. Like it was a night off anytime we just had to put matches together to just kind of do things. It was just fun. But yeah, that option is there. I know he has his story to tell as well. But for us, we're just the two guys that I feel that never had that trigger kind of pulled on, which for some reason, we don't know what it was. We don't know what it was about. And we're about to have that on SmackDown, but that was kind of ended abruptly. So
and one of the benefits of you guys is you have years of experience as a team, years of experience as a team on television, but you don't have a thing where people can say, well, they're overexposed. You'll be like almost like a fresh team to a lot of people, but you have appeared on SmackDown. You've appeared on NXT together. You have that exposure without being overexposed.
That's, I think, the benefit to us where we never – Like I said, we never got that chance, but now it's time for us to prove to everybody who we were. And I know deep down, that's all we've ever wanted to do was just work our asses off and prove who we were. And I think people knew that, not even the fans. I don't think fans really understand it, but like I knew a lot of the boys in the locker room would come back like, what's going on with you two? Like, we don't know. We ask and then we never get an answer. It's just one of those things where it's just a constant like, it's something missing or it's a no or... But it's just like, all right, cool. Whatever we have to do to prove to it, we're going to keep trying. And that's the one thing is we've always ever wanted to work. That's all I've ever wanted to do, even for the time being that we were off for TV for about a year until we became the Knights of the Lone Wolf. All I ever did was week in and week out pitch ideas. I'm like, hey, we can come back this way. Hey, we can do this. Hey, we can do this. And it's just like the constant no. But I'd rather be told no millions of times till I'm told yes for something because that all I ever want to do is work.
So how were you all told yes about Knights of the Lone Wolf? Like that was when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's great. It's something that Corbin needs to freshen him up. A lot of people might not remember. You all worked together an awful lot early on in NXT, yeah. Like 7 years before. So he was no stranger to you, but how was that creative brought up to you?
So we went through a creative process on that too. And actually, cause Chelsea was just on here and talking about sitting in front of Vince's office. We were there with her. So it was just funny to kind of like, yeah, we're there. And we started going to the Amway. After a while, I'm just like, all right, I need to make face value. I'm sick of sending emails. We want to work. That's all we want to do is come back to TV. And then when we did, like first person we saw is Big E. he's just like, oh, how you brothers doing? Like, we're good. And he goes, all right. He's like, you guys are doing the right thing. Just get there. He's like, hopefully everything kind of works out. And then even Bailey was there. She's like, you're sitting at the right spot. Just do what you have to do. Like, and it's just funny because everybody in the locker room knows, like, it's just you're fighting for spots and it's a TV show and that's what it is. And once you can find that niche or role that you fit on a television show, that's where it's at. And we just want to do our craft to the best of our ability. And that's what we wanted to do. So that's why we would go at the Amway. And then after a while, we were told, hey, don't sit in front of Vince's office no more. Just go wait in catering. Once he's ready, we can come talk to you. Like, that doesn't sound about right, but okay. But we had packets made of different character ideas that we wanted to try to go to. And we sat down with Bruce Pritchard. And we had our conversation and just wanted to get to know more of us, of who we were, like individually. And Corey's a guy from Texas. I'm a guy from New Jersey, which most people look at me and they're like, oh, wow, you're from Jersey. I'm like, yeah, from Jersey. But just to get to know each other that way. And then maybe 2 or 3 weeks after that is when we were told, hey, we're going to bring you guys back in. We have this idea with Corbin, and Corbin kind of hit us up to like kind of give us his idea of we were going to be kind of henchmen, hitmen almost. Not such henchmen, but like we're going to be like hitmen-esque. So we started brainstorming ideas and getting ideas for looks. And two of the looks we showed up to TV once we were there, one was a suit with the hoodies. The other one was polo shirt, tight, nice looking, like the hitman character in the video games. And of course we go in there, we're still long hair, full beard. And it's great because it's Bruce Pritchard, Vince McMahon. And then you just hear Vince go, oh, well, Bruce, what do you like? And he goes, I like that one. And of course, it's not the one I'm wearing, which is the hitman outfit we liked and we thought was cool. It was the suit and the hoodie, which we had like that today's generation of like the NBA dressing of how NBA players were showing up to games. Like, all right, whatever, we'll make it work. And then he goes, oh, the beard's gone. I'm like, all right. So here we are.
I didn't recognize you at all.
Yeah, changed completely. And I love it because I look 10 years younger again. But it's just funny how like you show up, we're fully haired and bearded. And Cesaro was the first person to see us laughing. He goes, oh my God. We're like, yeah.
I saw you and I was like, I didn't recognize you at all because I'd watched you wrestle for years in NXT. And I was like, oh my gosh, he does look 10 years younger. So I mean,
it was the cool thing too. I think it was a cool thing for us because it gave us something new, completely different of where we were going. And I was excited for it. I'm like, okay, cool. Now it got me brainstorming and creating. Sorry, the dogs are.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Dogs barking in the background.
It did reinvent you guys, though.
Yeah, and it was fun because now I'm sitting there just writing ideas. I'm getting creative again. My juices are flowing and everything. And then, you know, COVID hit.
I really think that would have went well with Corbin, too, because I think with the way that they've booked Corbin, I think that something fresh for him would benefit him as well, because I don't think he gets the credit. One, for being an innovator in the ring. He's always coming up with new ideas, like, in the ring and spots and stuff.
He's very good. He's very smart and intelligent how to protect himself, especially even his finish.
Oh, yeah.
With End of Days, he's very smart, and he was always good in NXT that way, too, and he was always meant for main roster on that end. But he was just fun to bounce ideas off of and just try to go to for things, and we were supposed to go into the storyline with the Mysterios and Murphy. And we were excited for that because now it gave Blake that kind of a little bit of an inkling to go to Murphy. And then it gives us the Mysterios. And then we get to work with Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
Like, I got to beat up Rey Mysterio a little bit. It was fun. I was just like, I got done. I was like, wow. I just threw Rey Mysterio into a guardrail for not even thinking about it at that moment until just now. We got done. But it was fun.
So to move back a little bit, we'll address the elephant in the room. There were some tweets before that.
Yeah,
that Jackson Ryker had put out, and it effectively got you guys taken off television. People in WWE were denying it to me at first, but it became very evident.
Sounds about right.
You guys had been on SmackDown. You were called up around Mania time. And then after that period in which, quite frankly, it looked like he might be released for a while. Like I know there were some people in the company that thought that. He pops back up with Elias. I believe this was right before you guys got news. So when you see that and you know that this controversy has caused you guys to be off TV, did you know ahead of time that he was going to be popping up there? Did you find out about this before you all were told you'd be back on TV? And how did you feel?
So started the tweets. Listen, everybody has their opinion. Everybody's allowed to have their opinion. That's the point of social media. Obviously, there's a two-sided coin to everything on how you feel and how you view things. You feel how you want to feel, say what you want to say. That's your business, not mine. I'm out walking the dogs with D, and I get a bunch of texts. My phone start blowing up like, hey, what the hell? And I'm just looking, and it's just screenshots of the tweet. And I'm just like, oh, come on. I'm like, I'm doing nothing. I'm literally at home walking my dogs. And then it just kind of instilled from there on how everything kind of unfolded. And that happened. We reached out to the office, and we went to the Performance Center where SmackDown was taping still at that time. So it was Raw. So Blake and I went in that next day because Riker was living in North Carolina at this time. He moved out of Florida at that time. So Blake and I went in, we're told, hey, we sat down with Mark Carano. Hey, you guys are good. Don't worry about it. Like, everything's going to be fine. Just give it a week and it'll kind of blow over. We're like, okay. Like, but we've seen this before. We know the way the company works. We kind of like, all right, we're just kind of getting the smoke blown up to us. Everybody talked to us. Big E, Kofi, like, we just sat and we talked. We're like, dude, like, they're like, you guys are fine. Like, listen, it's fine. Like, it's just the way things are type thing. But like, yeah, just, it's a okay. Shitty situation. Cause it's just a different time in the world, and it's shitty because we don't want to be involved in it because it's not our business.
Yeah.
Granted, it's our business to care for one another, but it's just like, just keep your words to yourself at this time. Just stick to wrestling, in that aspect. But then again, like I said, you're allowed to have your opinion. So, and then I think what was worse than the tweet was what resurfaced afterwards, but that's his business, not ours. And that's kind of where we just like, listen, we distance ourselves. This is how we feel. This is us, especially me in general. I wanted to distance myself as quick as possible just because, like, that's not how I think.
And you all were immediately lumped in. I mean, they hadn't established you guys on screen as individuals yet. So people are going to think it reflects all three of you.
Yeah. And that's the shitty part of the situation, because we were called up like about a month before Mania. We got told it was our last match against Grizzled Young Vets in NXT. It was our last match there. And then that's where Hunter pulled us aside beforehand and said, hey, we're calling you guys up. We just need you guys to make them look good before you guys leave. We're like, no problem. Thank you very much. I want to go make some money. But it's just one of those things where it just, it was off to the races. We were booked strong. We were working with New Day, who is just so damn good, so damn entertaining. And it was just so fun. And it stinks the way it happened, but you can't really reflect on it now. I try to not look back at it so much to where I've learned from it. And now I know, like, if I'm in a team, you have to, everything you do or say reflects on everyone, just like anything in any business, just like an NFL, the NBA, MLB, like, how you act and how you reflect is going to reflect on everybody else.
And not only were you all
got to look at everything from a business standpoint.
Not only were you guys up there and working with New Day, you were winning matches. You were winning all your matches.
We were going to win we kind of saw the writing on the wall where the story was going. And then once Big E messaged me, just kind of keep in touch, and we kept in touch the whole time. And again, he's one of the first people that reached out to me when I got let go. And he's an awesome dude.
Great
I respect
guy.
Him so much. And just for him and even Kofi, just to be so caring and giving when we first got there, because they've been in that spot. Now they know they have to elevate us. And that's something that was a fresh air for Blake and I, because we never really had that in NXT. We were always the ones that elevated everybody else, but then we always kind of like, oh, this isn't for you type thing. So it was the first time we got the taste of that. And I was like, God, this is wrestling. This is so cool. This is how business is done, and we all can make money together. And we were slated. We saw how after Cesaro and Shinsuke won the tag titles, we were like, oh, wow, that was going to be us. So, but now you look at it, you learn from it, and you're moving on.
And when a situation like this unfolds, obviously I got to ask around backstage, like, who's doing what? How do people feel? And I immediately had people say, oh, Cutler and Blake were here the next day trying to make good on it, trying to make sure in everybody's minds, hey, this doesn't reflect us. Like, you all were making what people called the right steps to take care of that. And I can tell you that a lot of talent I spoke to were quite frankly very upset that you two were lumped into it because of the time and tenure you all put in at the Performance Center. That was constantly reiterated to me. Like, you guys had been there since almost the start, if not the very start of the Performance Center, and got called up. What kind of emotions are going through your mind when you think of stuff like that?
That's why I'm glad we're talking now, because if I was to talk to you when I got released, I would have been a lot angrier and more lashing out. But now I just, like I said, I look at it from a learning standpoint. God, the time put in the PC with Blake was 7 years. Myself, I was at 6.5 years, and I loved, like, there was a lot of ups and a lot of downs, a lot of no's and very minimal yeses. But I learned a lot, and I learned the craft, and I can't thank my time in there for learning the way I did from Norman Smiley, Robbie Brookside, Adam Pierce as a coach there at that time, Nick Dinsmore when he was a coach there, Scotty Tuhati, just on the character-esque of things and how to do things and make moments. Sean, my time with Sean, and then Terry Taylor, just, he's one of the guys I don't think that gets enough credit, and I don't think a lot of people realize it. Like, he's just a bright mind for that place, and Terry and I talk daily. We just send texts to each other of bad wrestling, and it's the best. But you build relationships and bonds with people there, and it's great. Especially a lot of the talent that is there that nobody sees. And that's the one thing, like, with Blake and I, we were the talent that everybody got to see in the coconut shows, we call it, in Florida. And then sometimes on the road loops, we go out there and kill it with whoever we were with. And it was a lot of fun. And that's where we got the time to shine and show who we were. Because there were rules, but there weren't rules on the road loops with NXT. We tried to treat those road loops like they were a takeover loop, where every night was a takeover almost. And you want to go out there and have the best match possible, because then it gets people to buzz about it. Because that's where NXT thrived.
So as the time went on and you were not brought back to TV for weeks and weeks and weeks, are you hitting up WWE again? Are you showing up at all? Like, how is that working?
So we kept in contact with Bruce Pritchard and creative of SmackDown. And like I said, week after week, I was sending emails of creative of like, okay, I gave literally a month's worth of programming for us to just come back to, where Blake and I just, all right, let's jump Riker. We get the bait, like, we get the reaction off of that. Or if you want to write Riker off, have him go off of an injury, like, and we can bring him back eventually type thing. That's the best part of wrestling, is there's so much to create. It's a TV show. And it's just no answers. And like, oh, no, guys, keep pitching. And then after, got to October when they were at Amway. At that time frame, that's where we kind of were just fed up. And Blake and I just kind of started showing up each week and full suit and tie and wanting to pitch ideas, get a talk with Vince and constantly talk to creative. And then, like I said earlier, that's where we talked to Bruce and had our conversations of getting to know each other. And we don't know if that's what kind of led to us getting back on TV, just because we started showing face, but I believe it does. I think showing face is the number one thing. And we wanted to work. All I've ever wanted to do is just work for the company. Wrestling is what I love. And even when we were booked on NXT Coconuts, or if you had to travel and not work and you're sitting there setting up the ring, all I ever wanted to do was work.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is great. And all, I've set up a ring for years. I just want to work. It's the only way to get better.
So I had heard that during last summer, Daniel Bryan and Edge were both out and they were helping with creative. They would like receive some pitches and stuff. Did you work with any of them? Did you make pitches directly to any of them? How did that work?
I threw some of my ideas towards Edge, and he was great about it, and I loved it for it, because he's such a bright mind in the business, and he's a Hall of Famer. Love what he's doing now. I think he's doing some of the best promo work, because it's just realism to its fullest of how he's speaking, and then you can see it through his eyes even too while he talks. And I love the match at Mania between him, Brian, and Roman. Just was great. Just good storytelling, and the three of them are just so damn good. And that's who you like want to emulate. And that's why I reached out to him, because we originally started talking off because we used the company Warnstar for our gear. And that's who we kind of reached out to Riker about for it. So I'm just like, hey, Edge, hey, what do you think of this type of idea? And he's like, hey, he kind of just gave me notes back towards like how to pitch certain things. And I was so appreciative for it too, because he's been there, he's done it. And he's kind of gone through the system from the young age to where he is now.
So we had mentioned the SmackDown call-up as well. Something that I noticed when you guys wrestled, y'all had four matches. It was always you and Blake. Was that a coincidence? Like, what was going on? Because there can be a lot of reasons for that. Injuries, a lot of stuff. But it was always you and Blake wrestling on SmackDown.
Yeah, that's kind of how it always kind of was. Nothing against Riker. That's just, for some reason, in NXT 2, Hunter just saw it as the trio. Riker was the singles guy and Blake and I as the tag. And it's a lot easier to book a tag than it is a singles most sometimes. Cause it's very interchangeable. And we originally pitched ideas of us as the Forgotten Sons as like a freebird rule, where we're hoping that's what was going to happen. Cause we started doing that on Coconuts and some of the live events that we did there. And it was a lot of fun. Like even when we did six mans, a lot of the six mans we did were with Era, which I wish we got to have that program.
Yeah.
Cause they were so much fun to work with and it was a night off and it was just very easy to bounce ideas off of. And it was a lot of fun, but it was just always Blake and I, which we didn't mind because that's what gelled. We kind of knew what we needed to do and we were very easy to just read off of each other without having to really speak in a ring and calling things.
So you had mentioned you watched WrestleMania. So, I mean, it seems like you aren't like completely disgusted by the situation or something. You still got that love for wrestling and watching some WWE content.
Yeah, not to say if you're ignorant, but you have to watch all the products across the board. If you want to know what's going on, what's hot, what's getting over, what people are reacting to. And it's the first time a crowd is in front of wrestling right now.
Yeah.
I know AEW does it with the limited crowd, but you're having over 25 to 30,000 fans at Tampa and it is WrestleMania. Like, why would I not watch?
Fair point. I don't know.
And there's a lot of like my friends are on it. So it's just one of those things where I want to watch my friends. I want to watch Six Succeed, like Rhea Ripley holding the title at the end, like, so happy for her. Cause I know D really wanted to watch that match too. And, of course we just moved into our new house. So like I'm sitting here putting things together and trying to like peek in and see what's going on. But we made it a point to watch that match too.
So what you're about to experience is something that you haven't experienced in years. And I mean, back then, as you mentioned, you were very young in wrestling when you're working at the Monster Factory and all that. Is there anything that like, you've deferred to friends for help with, or even Deanna, who's been through this a couple times.
Yeah. She's kind of gauged me kind of how to speak a lot better and go like, she likes to say it, my five C's of just being confident in everything I say. Cause I'll tend to just speak my mind and it doesn't really come off in a business savvy esque way. I'm just very blunt and honest. That's just who I am. That's the Marine in me, I guess. But yeah, she's helped me navigate and she's been the best thing throughout this whole process. Cause she went through a different scenario when she was let go because she kind of just wanted to go spread her wings cause she's already done it and she wasn't allowed to do it there. So she was a lot different on the standpoint of the spectrum of where I was at, because I was kind of just let down and angry because the best thing I explained to her was like, it felt like somebody died, when I got the call, just cause I'm like, well, why? Like, okay, cool. But then once it kind of just settled in, now getting to put out videos and do my own creative process and build my character right now is the most fun I've had in wrestling and the most time I've just smiled in a long time too. Cheesy as if I lost my smile as could be. But like, no, it's just one of those things where I'm in something new and it's fresh. And it's that's the fun part. Once you touch something fresh in wrestling, of just getting your hands on creatively, like I said earlier, even us as the Knights of the Lone Wolf, like that, we just were excited for new. Just something new.
And when I spoke to her following her WWE release, we joked that she was 0-20 in WWE. A year later, she's one of the greatest Impact Knockouts champions of all time. Seeing that and watching someone that you care about so much experience that has got to create some optimism for yourself.
Yeah. When I watch her, I don't even think of me. I'm so proud of her. She's just a tough bitch. As just blatantly, but like she really is. She's just so beautiful. She's so tough. She's got it all. We roll around in the ring and I'm just like, God, I wish I could work like this all the time with somebody. Like, you know, it's just one of those things where it just comes natural to her. And I'm just so proud of her for where she's come from and like how she's just taken what happened in NXT and just how it didn't work out. Like, it's fine. Like, again, open door policy for down the road. Like, you don't know anything what's going to never say never in the business of WWE. Has always been said. And it's one of those things where she's doing her thing and I'm proud of her for it. And I want her to succeed and excel because back there, you can see where she's excelling.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just proud of her. She busts her ass and I'm proud of her for it.
And I mean, it is a bummer that Wesley Blake, who I'm sure a lot of people will get to know as Corey Weston or whatever name that he selects moving forward. It's a bummer that he was released, but when you see that, does it say, there's another opportunity, not just for me, but for us.
Yeah. We even joked the other day texting. I'm just like, let's go take over the fucking world. Like, that's the fun part. Sorry that I'm being vulgar there, but yeah.
My dude, we sell Blue Chew and Manscaped on this channel. Hell it yeah. Doesn't matter.
I got my Manscaped upstairs. I'll plug them for you.
There you go.
But no, it's just, there's so much, there's so many ideas we had that we pitched, and like, we had a year long of pitches. One of the pitches we had was to be a modern day APA. I wish, but at the same time, it doesn't work. So round down range, you find something else.
But I mean, again, look at Chelsea and Mickey and what they tried to cut on social media, and now they can, if they want.
Anything is possible in wrestling. You can do anything you want to do, because it's entertainment.
Yeah,
it really is. It's pro wrestling, but it's entertainment as well. Like, that's the fun part. Like I said, I love live crowds. You can do anything in wrestling.
So let's go back to the start. Now we're going to kind of Tarantino this a bit. Do you want to bury Danny Cage for like 20? I'm cool with that. I told him I was interviewing you, and he said, ask him where my watch is.
It's upstairs in my closet, just standing in the box. He can wait to get it back when he books me.
I love it. But the Monster Factory, how instrumental was that for you?
Very instrumental. So to start of my wrestling career, when I got out of the Marine Corps, I started going to college at Rowan University in South Jersey, and my parents are in Sicklerville in South Jersey. So I was trying to find schools, and a few of my friends were up in North Jersey that got me interested into wrestling, because Bright Lights, Jarrett Foster, I don't know if he doesn't work anymore, but it was D2W up there. Small World. Deanna used to go there and train. That's where she started. So go figure. It's crazy how it all works out later on down the road. But now that we're at the beginning, sorry to ramble.
That's okay.
But I originally started trying to go up to school in North Jersey. Just the travel wasn't going to work. So I tried to find a school in South Jersey, and that was the Monster Factory. And then Danny just so happened to start it back up and taking it from control of Larry, even though Larry was there at that time. Still, he would show up here and there. And it was great to have Larry there, because he just had that old school mindset. But Danny, I was the first person at that tryout, and I had no idea what I was getting into. Because I'm just like in a room, I show up early, I'm in gym shorts, I have my knee pads and my shooters in a bag next to me. We're in a Marine Corps t-shirt. I'm just fresh to the world, just going to school. And I'm just like, wow, I'm 25. I have no idea what I'm doing. And in just starts walking these cartoon characters for a tryout at the Monster Factory to just get into the school.
Yes.
So I'm just like, what am I doing? I'm just sitting there waiting, like, calmly. I'm talking to people, saying hello, just greeting everybody and whatnot. But then they said, who wants to go first? I was like, I will. I want to get out of this room as quick as possible. So we go in, we get in the ring, and you look like you're built. Like, of course, there's this panel of people. I have no idea who any of them were, except for Larry and Danny, because I saw them on the school. And then I started researching Larry and getting to know, like, because I'm like, all right, I don't know who he's about, but I should know what he's about if they ask me who he is. So I started looking up Larry Sharp. And then surprisingly, QT Marshall is there. Luis Martinez.
Damian Priest.
So Damian Priest is there. And I'm just sitting there. It's funny to just see where everybody's at now. But just for that time being, they're just like, oh, you don't know who I am? I'm like, I am so sorry. No, I watched WWE, ECW, and WCW. That's it. Like, I was born in the Northeast, so that's all I watched. But, and then run the ropes, take a few bumps. I said, all right, cool. Are you really invested in this? I'm like, sure. Like, all right, look at that camera up there. And it was like this little tiny of a dot. I said, who was your favorite wrestler growing up? I was like, oh, Bret Hart. And then like, all right, cut a promo on Bret Hart. I'm like, okay. Danny definitely has that somewhere. I don't know where.
I wouldn't want to watch
it. But it was just me talking about wrestling Bret Hart at the Garden, which would be a dream match.
Yeah.
Who would want that? But so Danny Cage. That's my start at the factory. But Danny Cage is his whole other entity of the Monster Factory.
Because that he is.
Like I told you before, we were talking before we started, like, Danny doesn't get the credit because of what he did. He didn't really get that name in the business. So yeah. He runs that school, and he runs it like a tight ship. He runs it like a boot camp, and he's teaching the drills that need to be taught. But at the same time, that's just Danny, and Danny's going to do what Danny does. And I don't fault anybody for being who they are. And I can't thank him enough for where he's gotten me and helped me get to where I am now.
I've been lucky enough, even though I haven't ever got the fortune of training there, I've learned an awful lot from Danny Cage, like through conversations with him and all that stuff, and always appreciate it. But you had the opportunity to learn from an awful lot of people at the PC. I mean, you were through a lot of different regimes, like I think from the DeMott era, right?
Mm-hmm.
Into the Matt Bloom era. I was actually in Columbus the weekend that they had the big DeMott Bloom switch.
What a weekend.
Oh, you're telling me. I remember that weekend. I was there doing like freelance work, and I snapped a little picture of Canyon Seaman, and he's like, "Hey, come here. What are you taking that picture for?" And I was like, "You know why I'm taking that picture, Canyon." And we had a good conversation, but he was out there legitimately getting eyes on Bloom for the first time, running things at an open at a tryout that I think like Karrion Kross and Bianca Belair were at. Like, this was new for them. What was that like learning from those different people and that transition between them?
So that's the funny thing is, like, I never had a problem with DeMott. DeMott, I called a lot of BS on him when I first got there, because like he used to do like a quarterly or like a monthly thing, like, "Hey, how's it going?" Like, and Bill was a Jersey guy, so he always kind of, I guess, clung to me because I was from New Jersey originally.
Yeah.
So like Bill was always good to me. I never had a problem with him. I know people did, but I never saw that side. So I go off of my perspective of people, and that's how I usually treat people. If I'm treated well, I treat you well. DeMott had his way. He wanted to weed people out, and that was his way. And I called him out on it originally. I was like, "Listen, I was in the Marine Corps. I know how this place works. It's like high school. I see how it's you pick up on it quick if you can get the social way of things work." Sure. And that's how that PC ran at that time. And then when Bloom took over, it just kind of changed, and there was a honeymoon period, but then it got back to kind of business again, to where not DeMott, but it was Bloom's era. And that's just how Bloom ran his ship. And that's his right. He's the head coach of that place. And so is Saramato. So both of them running it, they ran it their way, and that you can't fault them for, because it's their building.
They would also bring in a lot of guest coaches here and there. And I always love hearing people talk about their favorite guest coaches, because you would hear everybody from like big names to guys like Chris Michaels, who doesn't have a ton of television exposure, but has been on every indie ever in history and has wrestled the last 30 years. Did you have any like favorites that came through and you're like, "Man, I was really excited to learn about this from them"?
The number one person to me was Jerry Lynn. I loved Jerry Lynn and ECW growing up. I was always attracted to him watching on ECW, just because him and Rob Van Dam always had the best matches to me. When I was at that age, I was like, "Oh, this is so cool." I gravitated to that. So when he was there, it was kind of cool because he looked so different from how I remember watching. Like, he had the short hair. And, yeah, he's just so cool. But then it was great to have him in the PC. But like when guest coaches would come to the live events and they'd have a match, like that to me was always the fun part of like, "Okay, cool. I want to see how, like, what's your mind on this produce?" Like when they're producing, they're very, not very hands-on. They're very open, but they're also trying to learn us as we're trying to learn them. And that's the best part of, I think, wrestling, is having that creative ability to bounce ideas off of each other of what works and what doesn't, and then try their idea. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. If it does work, then you use it. You can use it somewhere down the line. And that's the fun part in wrestling. And that's what I think the best part of having coaches like that come in everywhere is awesome. And that's the one benefit of that building, I think. As much as I had a lot of negativity toward that building towards the end, because we were there so long, but that's just going to come with time. It's a sprint, not a marathon. Or it's a marathon, not a sprint, I should say. Just Jerry Lynn was that one guy that I was cool because I was like, I loved him as a kid.
He and Rob Van Dam, that's what drew me to ECW. I was like, "All right, I'm going to stay home on Fridays now because I can watch these two guys on TNN. And as a teenager, that's not like something that's a big sacrifice, being like, I'm going to hang out at home on Friday and watch these two guys.
Yeah. What drew me to Rob Van Dam was I thought he was Sean Claude Van Damme's brother. And I love Sean Claude Van Damme. Like, Street Fighter was big when I was a kid, the movie. So like, I'm just like, "Wait, that's like Sean Claude Van Damme's brother?" I'm like, "Oh my God." And it's not.
Yeah,
I'm just like,
course.
He's still doing athletic stuff. And you're just like, "Oh, this is great." And ECW at that time changed the way everybody kind of watched wrestling too. So, yeah.
I've also heard of these fabled Performance Center events that are like very in-house. Did you have any favorite matches that nobody will maybe ever see that you were a part of and that you saw there?
I was a part of many PC matches. Surprisingly, No, there was a lot of fun ones just because, like, there was a moment of it was Cannonball Briggs versus Baron Corbin. And I don't know how it happened, but this is a great story. And I'm sure a lot of people at the PC would tell you at that time. Corbin does his entrance, no music at that time because he was doing it on live events. And I think he did it at TV a few times. I'm not too sure in dark matches. But he comes out. Nobody made a, like, just not a sound. Like, you could have heard a pin drop. And he gets in the ring, stands there, does his full entrance. And it's so funny because everybody just somehow just came together that day to not say a word.
Yeah.
Everybody's kind of doing the look around like, oh, we're really doing this? And it just happened organically. And then as soon as Cannonball Briggs comes out, everybody loses it like Hogan in the late 80s at Mania. It was so great. And it was one of those moments in a PC where, like, you remember that just because it's just a fun moment. But I had a lot of fun matches myself, where I almost even died.
Oh, no, please.
Yeah,
tell
I got
us.
Dropped on my head a few times. It was great. It happens, but then it's just, you know, just keep moving. You learn that way. I'm sure Blake could tell you those stories at some point if you ever talk to him.
Yeah, I'd love to.
But I'll save those for later. But the PC is just a learning experience because I thought that was harder than live events when I was starting out there, just because you're in front of your peers and you just. You feel that tension. I don't know. Like, I don't know. There's like that unwanted tension. Cause like, they're like, oh, this new guy,
yes.
What is he doing? Like, what's he going to do? That's different. Or what's he going to steal? Or what am I going to steal? But like, it's funny to feel the difference between that and then being an extra on like Raw and SmackDown and doing a match. Cause there, I just felt like, all right, cool. When there's open arena, let's go. It was fun. Here at the PC, it was just different because you have all eyes on you, all the coaches. You know you're being judged. And especially at that time when I first got there, you felt like you're going to get fired every day. That's just how it was. Even in Dream's class for promos, like, you'd be cutting a promo. And if you didn't cut a good promo, you felt like you're going to get fired for it. And I felt like I needed to prove myself. Like, I love speaking and especially cutting promos. And that was always one of my favorite things to do was go in there and just kill it on a promo. And all right, cool. This is where the money's made in wrestling, at least these days to me. Like, if you don't connect with a crowd through the mic, connect with them at all. So it's just one of those things where you wanted to give your full effort no matter what you did, especially when Dream was there.
You mentioned Dream. How was he to work with? And like you said, it motivated you to step up your game, obviously.
Yeah. Dusty was the best. I loved it because he was just an honest person. He would start every promo class where you just sit there and go, all right, what's the dirt? And he just wants to know what's going on, like who's with who type thing, what's it's craziness. Funny. And he already knows some of the dirt. So he's just he's just like, come on, what's the dirt? And it was always just fun to see the creative process, but he brought everything out of everybody and sides of people you didn't get to see. Like, I'm sure a lot of the leak videos that come from YouTube and stuff from like stuff at the PC, like it's great to see, but like there is so much untapped potential out of so many stars that are even on Raw and SmackDown now that they could have had then. Like, it's insane.
So,
and like, one of the people there you saw was, at least for me that I remember, was when Becky Lynch did a Sister Abigail promo. I don't know if you ever heard that story. If she cut a Sister Abigail promo. And I remember this just because, like, holy shit, this is cool. Like, this is something different from Becky at that time. And this is when she was in NXT. So, it was just something different. And it was kind of cool to watch.
So how'd that work out? Like, do you remember any finite details about it? I mean,
no, just everybody would just literally Dream's classes was to go in, throw something at the wall. And if you see if it sticks, if it doesn't, you move on.
That's fantastic. That's gotta emerge sometime. That'll send the internet ablaze. And unless I've missed it at some point, man, that'd be a really good one.
Yeah.
I was looking back. Were your first, like, three NXT matches, like, on NXT TV?
My first match ever, I wrestled. So, originally, the protocol when you get to NXT, when I started, was you weren't allowed to touch the ring for a month.
Wow.
So, I started that January, wasn't allowed to work live events. And then I actually worked with Juice Robinson, CJ Parker. That July was my first match. And I was ecstatic. I'm literally in the middle of a tryout. And DeMond goes, what are you doing here? I was like, I'm working the tryout. You told me to be here. He goes, no, you're at TV today. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Go there and like, hey, you're doing this. Okay, no problem. Whatever you need. Just learn as we go. Because at that time, like the first year, you're told like, hey, this is how it works. You're not going to touch the ring. If you have a match, it's just to put somebody else over, which pretty much came the gist for me for a while there for 2-3 years. But yeah, it was a good learning experience that way as well, just because you see how the place operates and how everybody does what they do. I loved watching because at that time, NXT, the Coconut Loops were the same matches every night for 2 to 3 nights, depending on the weekend how it went. So I'd watch Neville and Bo Dallas wrestle 3 nights on a weekend, and I'm just like calling the spot, knowing what they're doing, but they change, like see what they change and where they change things. And it's just funny to see where everybody kind of ended up. And those two, even like Bo Dallas, very underrated, not talked about enough. And then Neville, I think, is one of the best I've ever had the chance to training in the ring with, and then even being in the ring with too.
And when you see Juice Parker and what, or Juice Robinson, what he's accomplished outside of WWE, I mean, he's one that also like a very untapped resource within yes. WWE, and saw that on his own, and we see what he's doing now in Impact in New Japan.
Yeah, he's killing it. I'm happy for him too. That's the best thing. Like I said, like me getting fired gave that kind of that spark in me. I'm like, oh, there is a world out there and I can do like something else. And I'm like, it's letting me get my creative juices going. And you really don't need the company to excel anymore.
Now there was one specific spot I remember. It was on NXT TV and it was out of the blue. I feel like in like 2016, you and Montez had a match, if I remember. Yes. And you picked up the win. What was the thought process behind that? And just, I don't remember much of a follow-up to it.
Yeah. The follow-up to it was me going against Shinsuke for a title match and then losing. It was like, hey, let's give you a win so that it looks like somebody has some credibility to then go against Shinsuke and then lose. Cause then it just built to Shinsuke and Joe.
There could be a lot worse situations than that when you're at the PC.
Yeah. But again, like I said, like everything's a learning experience there. After you look at it from a wide range, like when you step back and look at it, like you look at how booking went and that's how I learned from things. Okay. That's why they did this. Didn't make sense to me at that time, but now it makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But it was great because I love where Tez is at now, and I'm so happy for him. And we got to him, me, Blake and I with Dawkins and him were inseparable for months in NXT. And then they got on their ride, and that's just a team that I'm so happy for two people that are just so good, just good human beings in general. But yeah, it's just crazy to see like for where they've come from and how it started.
I also know you got to work at TakeOver. What was that environment like? Because TakeOvers are very, very special to be at, to watch, and it seems like a special environment to wrestle at.
We did a bunch of pre-shows, I know that, but the one TakeOver we did have was TakeOver 25, the ladder match, and that's one of the matches I'm very proud of, just for how everything kind of changed last minute, because the night before we all sat at a table at the hotel, got the match written down, and then as soon as we got to the building the next day, gone. And then throughout the rest of the day, we just kept changing and changing, even up till bell time, we kept changing things because just for timing issues and just trying to make moments out of certain things, not sure if it's going to be a moment. And like, I get that part, but we all just wanted to go out and kill it. And we still did. I still think we had the best match at that TakeOver. That's one of the better ladder matches to me in a long time that just told that story from beginning to end. And it was just a lot of fun because I grew up loving ladder matches, and I so badly wanted to hang on the ring and fall, but that didn't happen. It was pitched, but got shut down. But the one thing I'm proud of that is just the moment of Blake and I when we're on the ladder and we're about to climb and it looks like we're about to win. And that crowd is just booing the shit out of us. And I'm just, there's a smile on me that you can't see because I know what's coming next on my end.
Yeah.
And then what's going to happen at the end. But that's just one of those moments in wrestling where you just listen as a, like you're, even though you're in the match, you're still a fan of like, oh shit, we got him type thing. Cause when Tez does the springboard and gets it, Blake does that oversell on the punch, it takes the bump, grabs. Oh, it was just a cool feeling to just like, oh, thank God it's over type thing. But at the same time, we're just in it. And my parents were there. It was the first time they got to see me in a big arena, being in front row. And it was just a cool moment for me to just, of course, my mom didn't know it was a ladder match until bell time.
Oh no.
That was even the bigger thing. I was like, yeah, we're having just a tag match, Ma.
That's one of my favorite TakeOvers ever. That was such a good show. Top to bottom.
That was just a great venue. The whole venue itself, like it was just had that vibe of an NXT crowd just because it wasn't a huge arena, but it was just enough to where it was an NXT crowd. And whew, it was a lot of fun.
Something I try to ask, or try to remember to ask everybody who's been in NXT, did you ever work a Halloween costume battle royal? And if so,
I did. I worked multiple of them.
Ooh, please give me. Like, what were your costumes?
I got to work two. The one year we came out still as the Forgotten Sons because we were heels.
Okay.
So we didn't want to wear costumes. We came out and just beat the crap out of everybody. And then I had a bag of candy thumbtacks, if you want to. Just dumped out candy in the middle. We took a bump on that. It was fun to do.
Love it.
You get creative. But then the other one, I came out as Eleven from Stranger Things.
Oh, great.
Yeah, that was last year or 2 years ago, right before we got called up.
That's fantastic. And
yeah, those are fun. The house shows are the most fun. And I wish a lot of fans from around the country that are fans of NXT got to go to more of those coconut shows, because those fans in Florida, the fans here in Florida, I should say, just get treated to so many good things without ever getting the light of day on TV. It's just crazy.
And finally, I want to know, how did the creative come together for you guys to finally be put together as the Forgotten Sons? I mean, a lot of this was the fact that you guys had been around so long and hadn't got that opportunity that others had. How did you feel about that being implemented into the creative? Did that root in your personal feelings at the time?
So the Forgotten Sons came about with Blake and I pitching character ideas. And it was just after he was doing a Beautiful Blake gimmick and I was still doing America's Greatest Son. And it kind of both kind of wove into each other, because I was told, hey, we love what you're doing, but we're kind of missing something. We don't know what it is yet. And it was right after the NXT Australia tour, Japan, and Cali tour. It was a big tour they did at the end of the year. And then January came around and Blake was told, hey, we don't need you to be doing Beautiful Blake anymore because we have somebody else doing something similar. And then ended up being Velveteen Dream. So Blake said, just texted me as soon as he got back. And he goes, hey, you want to really be a tag? I'm like, yes, like, let's do it. It's at that time, we just saw the opening because there's no tag teams really. Revival was just getting called up. There's now FTR. And like, it had a lot of openings. So we just kind of got in there. We pitched our ideas for who we were, and we were just pretty much the Forgotten Sons. Like, you forgot about us. We weren't supposed to be pro America type thing. And that just kind of organically happened from the creative side, from the company. Cause you know, it's marketable.
Sure.
So you look at it in that standpoint. And then one time we did a road loop and Steve Corino, another person, and I can't thank enough that has helped me through my career, and he's a mentor to me. But he goes, hey, we're going to put Riker with you guys in a six-man. You guys cool with that? We're like, sure, if like it saves up some time on a car and has us a little fun. Yeah, and then we did it, and they're like, hey, you guys look really good together. And we're like, okay, like if that works for you, then let's do it. And then I want to say, not too sure on the year, I want to say 17 or 18, Blake had a match with Drew McIntyre at Chicago Takeover. It was on a pre-show. And I was supposed to wrestle Aleister Black. And that match got scrapped on my end. But Blake still wrestled McIntyre. But we were told originally it was going to be a promo backstage. This is how we're going to introduce you guys. We're okay, cool. And that's coming from Hunter. And then it didn't happen. But it's okay. Things happen like that all the time. And then maybe the following February, Blake and I debuted in Atlanta tapings at Center Stage. Match got scrapped, beat the crap out of the two guys. We announced ourselves in a promo as the first entrance to the Dusty that year. And they, hey, we booked you guys to go in the Dusty. We want to do it, but you're a new tag team. We don't want you to lose first round. So we're just not going to air this at all. We're like, oh, okay. Months go by again. That's when they add in Riker. And then we debut against the Street Profits at NXT TV not too long after that. So everything was about a three-year build. Pretty much as Blake and I as a tag, to make a long story short. But it was just one of those things where it's like they had something, it's just they never wanted to pull the trigger on it. You can't do anything about it. That's just how they see it, not our show.
It did seem immediately like you guys fit in really well on SmackDown as compared to your NXT run. Like when I saw you guys, it was a lot like Elias, where like when he popped up with the main roster, it's like, I get it. I get it. I see it. I see that now. And I see the broader appeal in it, and I think that you all were really good fits up there.
Yeah, I thought we brought that grittiness and that kind of difference. We weren't flashy, and that's the one thing Blake and I took pride in, and I know I take pride in. No matter where we went or what we did, we were always booed.
Yeah.
And I love it, because that's, I think, something that's lost nowadays. Everybody wants to do something cool, or it's good to pull things out like that and do something that makes a crowd like pop for it. But at the same time, I think sticking to who you are and what you are and doing things at the right time is what makes you the better character, the better storyteller as a superstar or just as a wrestler in general.
And if people have followed you on Twitter at Steve Macklin, they've seen a couple videos that you've dropped.
Yes.
Very interested in these because we're seeing a little bit something different out of you that we haven't really seen before.
Yes. And that's the fun thing. I love, again, like I said, the telephone game of the wrestling world where everybody has their, oh, it's this. Oh, it's this. Oh, he's trying to be like this. And I just like to sit back. I like to watch and let wrestling fans be wrestling fans because that's the point of wrestling. Think what you want. And then what actually happens, you're either going to like it or you're not.
And they're really well put together. Like the cinematography associated with them. I'm loving these things.
I'm going to do something. I'm going to do it right. So that's how I kind of look at anything. And that's the fun part about being creative now is I get to do it. And I have a great team that I met some friends along the way that helped me out. So
I'm excited to see where this goes. Anything else you want to let the people know before we wrap up? Obviously follow him at Steve Macklin on Twitter. Get used to the name.
On Instagram, Steve Macklin as well.
There you go.
And then also Pro Wrestling Tee is going to be happening soon. Waiting on those shirts to drop now creatively. So just stand by. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to the future. I'm looking forward to working, especially being back in front of live crowds. I miss live crowds. You guys are the energy and the reason why we do what we do. As baby faces, that sounds, but it really is. We feed off of you and we actually feed off of you as well. So it's just one of those things I'm excited for. And I'm just excited to just, I have no strings attached right now of just telling me what I can do and what I cannot do.
Well, Steve, I appreciate you being so generous with your time and trusting us to get your story out there. And we're excited to see you back in the ring. And again, without those strings attached, I mean, for plenty of people, the WWE way works and maybe it will for you one day, but we're excited to see what happens next. Steve, thank you so much.
Thank you. Everything happens for a reason. So we're going to find out what the future holds.
Until next time, guys, we're out.